A proposal in California to tax soda appears dead after its sponsor said he'd delay a vote until next year. There are, however, soda taxes in a handful of California cities, although the state legislature last year passed a law banning any new local soda taxes. The issue has cropped up in other cities as well, perhaps most notably in Philadelphia and New York City. I spoke more about this with Chris Madsen. She's faculty director for the Berkeley Food Institute at UC Berkeley. And I asked her if taxes on soda and sugary drinks in general have an effect on either raising money or reducing consumption.
So, you know, it's interesting because we've been looking for a couple of decades now for interventions that could actually change what people drink. We know that sugar-sweetened beverages contribute in a major way to cardiovascular disease and diabetes and obesity. And these taxes are actually an amazingly powerful tool in reducing consumption, in reducing how much people drink. And you talked about revenues. It's one of those few interventions, one of the few things that we can do from a public health perspective that not only, you know, reduces consumption, makes people healthier, but it raises money at the same time, which can be reinvested.
Do you see these kinds of taxes in the same way that people look at, for example, taxes on cigarettes or alcohol, other, you know, what people typically refer to as quote unquote sin taxes?
Yeah, well, so when we look back to why those taxes get implemented, there are issues around products. So, we think about the food and beverage industry. Its job is to make money selling product, right? It feeds us. That's really important. And their job is to make money. And in fact, that's really the only thing they're held accountable for. They're not held accountable for the health of our population. That's, you know, we haven't decided to set it up that way. So they play by a certain set of rules. What that leads to are these things called negative externalities, where there are costs that are associated with the products that are sold that aren't borne at all by the people selling the product, right? So if you think about cigarettes, we realized after some period of time that cigarettes caused lung cancer. There are huge costs associated with that. And somehow that should be kind of part of the price of the product. So both it can pay for some of the problems, and also people are aware that there are huge costs with these products. So the taxes that we put on cigarettes over the last couple of decades have been incredibly effective in reducing consumption. And, you know, the tobacco companies are actually contributing in a major way with settlement money to the health of the public. Those monies get used for things like anti-smoking campaigns or physical activity campaigns or education in schools.
I wonder about one potential key difference, though, which is that cigarettes are illegal for some people, as is alcohol, whereas, you know, sugar-sweetened beverages are not illegal for anybody. I mean, anybody can drink them. I wonder if that is maybe one of the reasons why there has been backlash against some of these taxes that have been tried to be put into effect in certain localities.
Yeah, that's such a great point, right? It's really easy to see the dangers of cigarettes and alcohol. We know, you know, people get drunk, they drive, they crash. So it is a little less clear anytime you're talking about a food. We know we need food, you know, for sustenance. Food has all these micronutrients like, you know, vitamins that we need, proteins and fiber. So the interesting thing about sugar-sweetened beverages is that they are the only food product that has zero nutritive value. So there are special things about sugar-sweetened beverages because they've also been shown to cause obesity in, you know, these really special randomized control trials. We know they actually cause obesity. We know they're linked to diabetes. So even though they're not illegal, they are really problematic with health, and they're unique among other foods and beverages.
I wonder if that uniqueness is maybe subtle enough that at least psychologically people get more ticked off about this. Like, don't take away my soda. It's okay if you want to make me pay more for a pack of smokes, but, you know, when it comes to my Big Gulp or my soda, like, take your hands off it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And people sometimes will say, well, it's like a nanny state. So here's one of the things that we don't always talk about. When people say, you know, keep your hands off and I don't want government interfering in my choices, let's just take for a minute. Okay, let's say that the government doesn't say anything. That's fine. We remove ourselves from the conversation because people don't want us in, they don't want government influencing choices. So if there's no voice besides government, it's not like there's an absence of influence, right? It's not like so people are now making decisions in a total vacuum. There are billions of dollars spent by the beverage industry and the food industry every year that are all about getting you to buy their product. But people don't realize that those billions, literally billions of dollars that are spent on advertising to youth, to kids, to adults every year have a huge impact on our choices. So I think that most of us who look at, you know, soda taxes or other pretty intensive, you know, approaches to changing behavior, we're really interested in just leveling the playing field.
Do policymakers, in a sense, do you think, have to be careful about how they allocate that money? Because in theory, if the goal is to have fewer people drinking these beverages, if that happens, then that means less revenue for the state, in this case, or a city, in the case of the cities in California that have done this. So I'm wondering if, like, it needs to be really targeted where that money goes. So as the revenue drops, programs that really rely on that money that are still ongoing don't get left holding the bag.
One of the interesting things that we've seen now with the taxes in Berkeley and Oakland and Mexico and Philadelphia and Chicago as well, some of these data have been publicly, you know, released and some are still internal, but there is an immediate, almost in every case, there's an immediate drop with very small incremental changes beyond that in terms of real changes in consumption. So, you know, in Berkeley, we saw a 20% drop originally in some neighborhoods, 26% when you looked at soda. And now when you look at soda, it's gone up to like 40% for soda. So there is some incremental change over time, but the biggest drop is actually an immediate drop.
Chris Madsen is faculty director for the Berkeley Food Institute at UC Berkeley.